13:35 on the 27th of April. And I tell you, probably be the best at this point in time. We have a young lady here that is one of our honored guests. Ellie, could you come up and sit with us? We're going to need you to speak in the microphone when you get over here. There you go. And today we have with us, and Ellie, would you just put yourself on the record so we know exactly who you are? Just speak in that microphone. Just say your name. Where are you from?
My name is Ellie Hackery, and I'm from Juneau.
Where do you go to school?
I go to school at Riverbend.
Okay, good. And with us in addition today with Ellie, and we thank you for joining us, we have Senator French, who's to your right there from Anchorage.
Hi, Ellie.
And myself, Charlie Huggins, and Senator Cowdery.
Welcome. With us.
So we're glad to have you. What we're going to do today is we have two bills we're going to hear. And both of them are about transportation. One of them is about operating vehicles, and the other one's about, I think, electric vehicles, but we'll learn about those. But it's about things that roll down the road for the most part. And you'll hear some things you probably never thought about, how cars and trucks and what happens if you get in trouble driving them, how that works. So if we could start with House Bill 266 and presenting that today, I'm not sure. Jennifer Baxter, you know her?
Mm-hmm.
Which one? Would you point her out? That's her right there. Oh, very good. How do you know Jennifer?
Because she's my sister.
She's your sister. Oh, okay.
Somebody claims
me. Oh, very good. Okay, Jennifer, you'd put yourself on the record, and we will hear from you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Jennifer Baxter, staff to Representative Jim Elkins. And today before you is House Bill 266. It's an act relating to penalties for violation of vehicle limitations, which modifies existing law related to the penalty structure for overweight vehicle violations. This legislation proposes the first increase in penalties since the existing provisions were established in the 1970s. Existing provisions do not adequately inhibit commercial shipping companies and others from violating overweight vehicle limitations. The proposed modification establishes a graduated penalty for the amount of weight in excess of the limitations set by statute, regulation, and permit. And another provision of the bill prohibits the use of overweight vehicle violations for use by insurers to adversely impact decisions related to providing private automobile insurance coverage for the drivers. And that's because in most cases the drivers are usually unaware of whether or not they're overweight, but they can be impacted by their personal insurance. So there's a clause in there to not allow that. So we ask for your support on this legislation, and the Department of Transportation, Teamsters, and Horizon Shipping Lines are all on board with House Bill 266. So thank you very much.
Okay. Is Jennifer, to date, have you had any resistance to your bill?
Yes.
Okay. Would you tell us about the resistance?
We had resistance. Let me find my memos here. With the transportation version, or the finance version, took out Section 3, which was a repeat offender violation clause. And under Alaska statute, the commissioner already has authority to investigate the what it did is it was set up by having 12 after so many violations, then they'd go in and investigate. But under current law, as is now, he can go in and investigate with maybe just one or two violations. So it didn't really impact it.
Was it required?
Either way, it was not necessarily required. So one significant change in the bill because it was an entire section. My boss, our House Transportation Committee, sponsored this bill, and there his main concern was that we wanted the drivers to be protected with their personal automobile insurance. As of now, that's what this bill we feel does. And also establishes these fines that haven't been changed since the 1970s, so we feel good about that. And further down the road, if there's a bill that comes up that may protect them from paying the fines, the drivers themselves, then we'll work on that. But
okay. Let the record show that Senator Kukesh has joined us. Other questions for Jennifer? Senator Cowdery?
Yeah. Having been in the construction business for 30 years or so, I had the occasion of a few times to haul equipment up here over the highway to Anchorage. And when I was in, I bought a cat, for instance, and when I was in Illinois, we loaded the cat on the truck and went to immediately to a scale to make sure. And at that time, I found that I was overweight. The cat that I bought didn't have, I mean, the advertisement of the weight of the cat didn't include, for instance, the bucket on the front of it. It was just a track. So I had to take the bucket off, and I bought a pickup truck. And I took the bucket off to make the truck legally haul, and I was about within 50 pounds. I was light on the legal. Well, as we headed north, we picked and we stopped at scales, and I kept this state of Illinois' scale ticket with me. And the only difference could have possibly been one scale or the other was the amount of fuel I had in the truck. And so I had, when I had it weighed, the truck was full of fuel. So as I went down, and so anyway, we got up north, and we picked up a lot of ice and snow on the truck. I get to a scale, and we're overweight. And I argue with them, show them that, you know, it's not, we might be overweight, but it's no fault. It's the snow. If you guys had plowed the road, I wouldn't have picked up the snow. You tell them all kinds of stuff, you know. Fortunately, I got here without getting any tickets for overweight. But that... And having been in the business and having trucks, dump trucks, and you go to do some work on a say a house, and you find out that you've got to haul material away, you don't have scales there. You know, you load the truck up to what you think is legal, and it may or may not be overweight. So, I and for them to go, as I understand this bill, to the driver of the truck and penalize him some way with high insurance rates, I think that's improper and that more or less a statement. I wasn't asking for an answer. It's just the facts as I have been through myself on this. So
yeah,
thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Senator Cowdery. And this bill precludes the driver for having his insurance, his personal insurance rates impacted. That's
what this bill does, yes, okay. Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, good. I wonder, can we retroactively give Senator Cowdery a ticket for being overweight? It's like he was guilty. Anybody else a question? Senator French.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a quick question, and it may have come up in an earlier committee. I saw a note about it, but my question is, who winds up having to pay these tickets? If the driver, most of these drivers aren't operating on their own personal trucks, they're operating for a commercial outfit. Who winds up paying these big fines?
Through the chair, Senator French, that was a obstacle that was brought forth pretty much the last minute. It sounded we had truck drivers in our office a couple weeks ago, and it sounds like it's between the operator, owner, and the employees as far as who pays fines. The tickets. This bill doesn't show or doesn't navigate to who pays. That could be an entirely separate bill if we wish to maybe make the owners, operators, employers solely responsible for those fines. That is still between the drivers and their employer. As far as we found out. But with the insurance, their personal insurance, this protects their insurance from being impacted.
So it's just a matter of whatever the contract is, whatever the agreement is between
hopefully,
the driver and their employer.
Yeah, hopefully they're aware of the agreement. But if they are stuck with the fine, yeah, then that probably
the bill doesn't tax. Assign it to either party. Understand. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, thank you. Ellie, you have any questions for Jim?
Mm-mm.
No? Senator Calgary.
Yeah, wouldn't it be, ask my colleague here who has more legal experience than I, whatever the ticket was given and the driver's license number on that ticket, somehow it seems to me at that time, whoever the driver is for everything except safety. If their tires are not capable and the brakes, I think that goes to the, in other words, they're grounded, whatever they might have been my experience, but I think that the weight and thing goes to the driver of the vehicle. I think the ticket goes.
I mean, I'm sure you're right. I'm sure it's issued against the driver. I just wonder if sometimes there isn't some kind of an indemnification agreement between the driver and the person that loaded the truck or the person he's working for, because oftentimes I think we've already found out the driver doesn't know
that's
how
right.
much stuff's getting loaded in there. You know, and maybe it's not his fault, it's the guy that was dumping the gravel in there that really should pay.
That's true, and you know, we had, like in our case, we had, like especially in the fall of the year when it was getting cold and we were loading, you dump the stuff out and a yard stays in the truck. It's froze to the truck bed. And the next loader guy that comes in, he says, well, I got to put 2 scoops or 4 scoops or whatever size loader he has, and he don't inspect that, which he maybe should or not. I don't know if that's his responsibility. So you can, it's a situation I don't know the total answer to, but it seems to me that the driver would be issued the citation.
And I think we're in agreement then. Thank you.
But that's not an issue we're determining here today. We'll let the driver and the operator or the organization sort that out. Is there anything else, Jennifer, you want to point out to us?
I just see here through my notes, maybe for clarification about the removal of the multiple offender section, it says the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities under statute has authority to investigate motor carriers that can be exhibiting a pattern or practice of violation, and that's AS 4575090. And that is why we took it out.
We have Mr. Dwayne Bannock with us here today. Sir, you have any exception to this bill?
No.
Okay, good. I tell you what we're going to do, Jennifer. We're going to visit with probably some people you've heard from before. Mr. Ave Thompson. Ave, you there?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. This is Ave Thompson, the Director of Commercial Vehicles in the Alaska Department of Transportation.
Good.
Pardon the background noise, but I'm boarding a plane in Minneapolis.
Very good. What's the temperature?
It's 72 degrees. It's awfully warm.
Yeah, be careful.
I'm trying, sir. I'm trying.
Yeah. Abe, anything you want to add onto the bill?
Just that the department is in favor of this bill. This is the first increase in penalties in more than 30 years, and it's in my view long overdue. The question of to whom the citation is written is a matter that we need to deal with at some other time, I believe. There's a provision there that provides that the insurance companies can't use overweight tickets in an adverse rating action for personal vehicle policies for commercial drivers. The issue that Senator Cowdery raised, could you hold on for just a second, please?
He's taking his shoes off.
We have provisions in our administrative code that provide for weighing allowances to accommodate conditions such as that. So I think we're trying to be as fair as we can to the driver. The driver doesn't always know. The citation is, in fact, written to the driver. The company, more often than not, pays that citation, pays the fine. And I think it's also important to note at this point that the Alaska Trucking Association and a number of the major carriers are in support of this legislation. And so what the industry is saying is that we support an increase in the fines. So in my view, the stars are in alignment, and this is a good piece of public policy, and we need to move forward.
Good. Well, Abe, stand by a moment. Let's see if there are any questions for yourself. Thank you for joining us today. Questions for Mr. Thompson? Okay, hearing none. Thanks, Abe. Have a good flight.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You bet. Thank you.
Bye.
Mr. Richard Acey from Carlisle?
Yes, Richard Acey, Mr. Chairman, from Carlisle Transportation.
Yeah, Richard, if you would. Just if you could give us your comments and thoughts on the bill.
We're in support of both phases of the bill. It, like Abe's mentioned there, it has been a long time. And I have been a recipient of one of his overweight tickets. So, and most cases, in all of the cases I know of anyway, with Carlisle and the other companies that I know of, the driver gets the ticket and the company pays it. So with the with this change, it's been hard if a guy that he don't want to haul a heavy load because he may be overweight, and this will kind of help that in that respect.
Okay, good. Thanks, Richard. Questions for Richard? Thank you very much, Richard. We appreciate that. And Michael Bell from Alaska Trucking.
Yes, I am here, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Michael Bell, and I am the director of the Trucking Association. I'm here to, as Mr. Thompson mentioned, to testify to our support to the amended Finance Committee substitute to House Bill 266. We feel that this bill goes along to protect two vitally important assets to the trucking industry, our drivers and the road infrastructure. As was previously discussed, this begins to address the personal automobile insurance issue that adversely impacts the drivers through receiving overweight tickets on their personal driver's license. Drivers are rarely responsible for loading their vehicles and have little opportunity to adjust their loads if they are overweight on the axle or gross. And companies, almost in entirety, do pay that fine or any burden, and they should continue to bear that responsibility. On this bill also helps to protect the roadways through the increase of the fine. We feel that this the increased fine structure will help to deter the prohibitive overloading and the continual discouraging of overloading trucks. Thanks for your time, and I'd be honored to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you very much, Michael. Questions for Michael? Okay, good. Thank you. I see that we have John McKinnon here listed. John, unless you have something very, very striking, we may not need your testimony unless you just enthusiastically want to launch up here and sit by Jennifer. Questions, comments on the bill? I think it's pretty straightforward. Jennifer, we appreciate your coming here. We certainly appreciate Ellie being able to join us here. And I don't know, Ellie, whether we have you on TV or not. I'm not sure. You might be able to watch yourself later on. So with that, Senator Cowder.
Ready for a motion?
Yes, sir.
I'd like to make a motion to move a bill from House Transportation. Is that committee substitute? If I got it right, committee substitutes for House Bill 266, Finance, on to the next committee referral with the accompanying fiscal note, zero fiscal note, and individual recommendations.
Okay, very good. Thank you very much, Jennifer.
Thank
and we
you.
Will just take a brief at ease. back to order. Before us is House CS for House Bill 403. If I could have a motion to bring that before us, and we will have to explain what we have here.
Yes, I move that we bring House Bill 304 before the committee this time for questions and
Thank debate. You very much. Yeah, and if the presenter would give us an overview of what we're having to adopt here based on, you know, your experience in the other body.
Certainly, Mr. Chairman. My name is Ian Fisk, staff to Representative Thomas. What occurred with this bill is, and I have a letter here from the House Finance Committee, but they sent the wrong version of the bill after it passed House Finance to the floor. And nobody, myself included, or the 39 members of the House who voted unanimously for the bill, noticed that it was the wrong version. So I apologize for that. The simplest way, Mr. Chairman, to correct this is to adopt Work Draft L, which reflects the changes that House Finance made, and take it from there. It'll obviously mean it'll have to go back to the House for concurrence, Mr. Chairman. And as I explain what the bill does, I can tell you what the small change was in the bill.
Yeah, and so we're moving L for the purposes of a working document. We have that before us. So if you would, Ian, go ahead.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. What House Bill 403 does is it deals with low-speed vehicles, also known as neighborhood electric vehicles. The federal definition, low-speed vehicles, recognizes that some of these, this class of vehicle can be powered by other means than electricity, such as propane. And the most common question that I get on this is, oh, you mean golf carts? And we're not talking about golf carts here. These are a class of vehicle that have to meet a number of different federal standards that are similar to a regular vehicle. They have to have headlights, tail lights, brake lights, emergency brakes. They have to have an automotive quality glass windshield, bumpers, etc. And they have to meet a federal safety testing program as well. These vehicles are limited to a maximum speed of 25 miles an hour, and they also have to be able to go at least 20, so it's a pretty narrow range that they're designed for. And they cannot be used on any road with a posted speed limit of more than 35. So what they're really designed for, as the title, short title suggests, is neighborhood use. They've been legalized in 36 states, and some of the applications, you know, they're popular in gated communities or in quiet neighborhoods, popular with the elderly in some cases, or the disabled in others, or simply people that just really want to use a zero emissions vehicle for the cost and environmental reasons. We were approached by a constituent who is interested in setting up a dealership for this class of vehicle, but the Department of Motor Vehicles does not allow their registration and licensing right now. And so we worked with DMV, who's very supportive of the bill, to come up with something here that would allow this to occur in the state. So I wanted to point out one other thing that we've kind of gone back and forth on in a couple of committees in the House, which is the definition. In Work Draft L, the definition, so this is, as it currently stands, the definition is that this is a vehicle that has four wheels and an unladen weight of 2,500 pounds or less, and then et cetera with the 20 and 25 mile an hour limits. The problem with this is that these vehicles are kind of evolving, and apparently the federal standard has already been changed up to 3,000 pounds. One of the manufacturers, at least one of the manufacturers, is actually designing a small, a 3,000 pound version of this vehicle that'll hold six passengers, kind of for like small tour uses apparently. And so after speaking with the drafters, a couple of different attorneys here, it's probably best to go with the definition that would just track federal law. There's plenty of other examples in statutes, in Alaska statutes, where this occurs, and it would basically be the pragmatic approach to make sure we don't have to come back and go through a new piece of legislation every time the federal standard changes. So that's just one option that I wanted to present to you folks today for your consideration. And with that, I'll entertain any questions you might have. Okay. Thank you.
Question, Senator Gowdy.
These require, you say, all the things, headlights, seat belts?
That's correct, Senator.
Require seat belts?
Mm-hmm.
Are they I know you say it's on for neighborhood, not on main highways, but the thought occurs to me there's vehicles and stuff, heavy vehicles that do come in neighborhoods too. Not all are restricted trucks and stuff. So how do you, are these present a hazard, do you think, if on the neighbors, to, could they use the bike trails or some other?
Through the chair, Senator Cowdery, I don't think they'd be as appropriate for bike trails, but and I don't think they'd really be a hazard for the neighborhood use. I mean, really, the way our laws work now, you can ride a motorcycle through a neighborhood, as you know, as long as you're obeying the speed limit. And there are occasions where, yeah, it could mix with larger vehicles, but for the most part, this class of vehicles would not.
Are they dealerships in the state, if I could continue, mm-hmm. that want to sell, that do sell these type of vehicles that we're talking about?
Senator Cowdery, I haven't heard from any existing dealerships, but one of our constituents in District 5, House District 5, is interested in doing that. And I think there'd be a number of applications for this type of vehicle, especially in smaller towns where, you know, there's not as much through traffic and that kind of thing.
Yeah. Are there safety?
Wayne, why don't you come up and join us here, because I'm sure there'll be a question here. I'm sorry, Senator.
Are the safety factors on this vehicle, are they lower than any safety factors on any other vehicles that travel the roads?
To my knowledge, Senator Cowdery, that they don't have airbags in them. There's a gentleman online who I believe should be online who works for one of the manufacturers, and he might have more information on that. But, you know, I don't think they have side impact airbags or regular airbags. You know, I guess it's just due to the weight considerations and so on.
They have, I assume, doors that it's not just an open golf cart type vehicle that we're talking about here.
Senator Cowdery, I think most of the vehicles do have doors, but I don't believe that they're absolutely required to have doors. I think what you'd see for use in Alaska is that, you know, given a day like this, I think people would probably want them. But the models that I've seen photographs of, I saw one that did not have doors, and I think that those are popular in places like Arizona. But as I recall, and correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think that doors are required by the federal safety standard on these vehicles, but I think the market would kind of demand it up here.
And last one, I think. What's the knowing that they're in neighborhoods, but there's large SUVs that go in neighborhoods, there's garbage trucks, there's all kinds of heavy, big vehicles go in neighborhoods. And what about the collision aspects of these? Have they been tested like our automobiles are for impact?
Senator Cowdery, I'm not certain if they've been subject to the crash test dummy kind of scenario. But I mean, I think that they're a much safer vehicle than, say, a moped or a motorcycle that's already legal on our streets. They do provide a, you know, a structure around them, and the seat belts and bumpers and so on. So I think they're kind of, and plus because of the fact that they're governed to 25 miles an hour, you're really subject to, like you say, the larger vehicle, but they're definitely safer than some other licensed modes of transportation.
One last, sir. The range, they're electric. What is the range, proper range? How many hours can they run?
You know, I'm not certain, Senator. I think that varies quite a bit depending on the usage and the load and so on. And I'll defer to Mr. Canelli, who I believe is online, who can give you more details.
Okay.
They're fairly low range, though, Senator. They're not going to be the kind of vehicle you would use to go between cities. You know, like, I doubt you'd drive one down to Homer, for instance. I don't think you could really get out of town in Anchorage very far.
Other questions for Ian? Ian, I don't know, when I visualize this, what I see is, I mean, like this town, you know, small vehicles will be running around taking tourists. Is that sort of what we're talking about for the most part?
Yes, sir, Senator Huggins. I think that would be a common application, as, you know, for areas where you already have low-speed traffic anyway, and it provides a, you know, cheaper way for people to get around and so on. Kind of a novelty in some cases, but in other cases, they're just a convenient tool for people. I mean, I read somewhere most of our trips with vehicles are remarkably short. Trip to the store for an extra, you know, jug of milk, that kind of thing.
So probably initially it appears to me that this is probably commercial use sorts of things and not personal use, or not. What do you think?
Well, Senator Huggins, I think they could be used in both. Yeah, I mean, we've had a couple calls from folks that were interested in just personal use for the vehicle, or they could be used for tours. I don't know, perhaps Mr. Bannock has heard of other applications. But
yeah, Dwayne, why don't you put yourself on the record and give us a 30-second burst?
Certainly. Thank you. My name is Dwayne Bannock, representing Division of Motor Vehicles today. First off, thank you to Representative Thomas's office for this bill. Indeed, the DMV loves this bill. Just a very brief genesis. Under the existing Alaska statutes that define a motor vehicle, it's easy to confuse this title, low-speed motor vehicle, like a verb. This is not a Lamborghini that won't get out first gear. It is a vehicle that is specifically designed to be something. So LSV is actually a noun. It's the name of a thing. In Alaska, your Division of Motor Vehicles has the authority to license and title motor vehicles. And when we put that metal piece of license, that metal plate on the back of the car, and when we issue it a title, that means that in Alaska, that vehicle can go anywhere it wants to on a road. Because the low-speed vehicles are, by federal designation, not given the same authority as that Chevy Suburban to go 65 miles an hour on the Eagan Expressway, your Division of Motor Vehicles has carried the belief that that's why the federal government set up another classification called LSVs. Thus, without the specific designation within our statutes to create a separate classification of vehicles, we cannot, when the customer comes to us and wants to register that LSV, we regretfully have to say no. Those of you that know me don't like to say no to our customers, but that's what we have to do. This bill recognizes what an LSV is as per federal definition of it, gives the DMV the authority to collect the registration fees, issue a special license plate for it, and life would be good. I brought with me the 54-page summary of the federal definitions of the LSV. It's 54 pages. It's some of the most boring reading that you would ever want to spend a couple hours pouring through. But to answer the question pertaining to the doors, there is a line in here that reads, "It does not appear necessary from a safety standpoint to design them," the LSVs, "to meet the full range of passenger car federal motor vehicle safety standards, especially those incorporating dynamic crash requirements. Because while in that neighborhood that you were describing, we possibly could have the garbage truck and the LSV, by confining the environment that the LSV is legal in, the chances of that interaction is dramatically less in a 25 mile an hour zone than it would be on the Eagan Expressway."
Questions for Dwayne?
Mr. Chairman, if I might, probably point out what the main point that the House Finance had changed,
right,
that was omitted from.
Yes, please,
okay,
if you would.
Thank you. On page 3, lines 9 through 11, House Finance added that they basically they put in an opt-in provision for communities on this, for municipalities. It says that a person may not operate a low-speed vehicle within a municipality unless that municipality has adopted an ordinance allowing the use of low-speed vehicles within its jurisdiction. The original bill, we kind of took the direct opposite approach, you know, that a community would have to opt out, which is why the lines 12 and 13 below that were in the original bill, saying a municipality may further restrict the operation within its jurisdiction. So it's kind of a policy call. That's how it came out of House Finance. It seems in some ways that it would make more sense to do it the other way, but that there's a good logical argument to respect local, you know, local government. In either case, I think a local government can, you know, can further restrict it if it's necessary. But I just wanted to bring that to your attention and let the committee
do it. I understand it. There potentially there have been some communities that showed a little bit of concern and resistance to this or not. Is that true or false?
Senator Huggins, I haven't heard from any communities with any resistance.
We haven't. Okay,
no,
good.
But it was a point brought up by one member of the Finance Committee who, you know, had a concern there, and that's where it lies. I haven't heard from any communities about it. And again, they'd still have the, you know, they can further restrict on lines 12 and 13 if they wish. So
right.
It's just a philosophical choice.
Yeah. But as far as from you, from a licensing standpoint, Dwayne, that doesn't create any difficulty for you.
Directly, bureaucratically, it does not. The only caution that I would throw out there, under the proposed amendment, potentially, I'll pick on my friend Senator Cowdery, could come buy one of these vehicles, come into my office, I license it, title it, register it, yet the municipality of Anchorage, not having adopted an ordinance allowing it, could disallow its use in that scenario. That is a scenario.
I think if I might add again, Senator, Mr. Chairman, I think we have one of our constituents online who has some comments to make on that.
Yeah, okay, good. Okay, Mr. Michael Katze from Skagway?
That's correct.
Yeah, Michael, if you would, put yourself on the record, and we'll be anxious to hear your testimony.
For the record, Mr. Chairman, my name is Michael Katze. I'm the Executive Director for the Skagway Development Corporation.
Yeah, go ahead, Mike.
We had originally approached Representative Thomas in getting this bill underway because one of my clients here in Skagway would like to see these vehicles being available to the Alaskan public, and he would like to start a dealership. He would like to also provide a rental facility for them for the tourists that come here. I had never heard of them when he approached me with the idea, but then when he showed me the pictures and some of the technology that's going on these days with them, it made a lot of sense for communities such as Skagway and other rural communities, and also at earlier neighborhood use. I'm becoming more and more enamored with these vehicles the more I read about them and the more I see about them. I think this is a good bill. I have issue with Section 4C1, where municipalities have to opt in. We don't do this with any other vehicle. I just can't imagine the nightmare that anyone must have, any business owner who wants to start a dealership or who wanted to provide for the rental of these vehicles would have to go to them. You know, to be profitable, you're going to be able to service more than one rural community. You have to go to each and every community in the state of Alaska, either on your own or as a group of the businessmen, and get them to pass an ordinance is just going to be a nightmare. And it's very onerous ask for anyone to sort of do. I mean, you could have the potential where you could, if Skagway passed an ordinance saying you could use them, you could get on the ferry, and there'd be nowhere else in the state of Alaska where you could get off the ferry. Imagine us doing it with any other vehicle or any other product. If it's legal, meets safety standards in the state of Alaska, then it should also be legal to operate in municipalities without an opting in clause. And the reason I support that is because of Section 4C2 says a municipality may, by ordinance, further restrict the operation of speed vehicles within its jurisdiction. But there is provision in the bill to allow municipalities to restrict their use within the community out of certain areas or off certain streets. So I think it seems backwards way of doing things. I know this administration has been working very hard on streamlining the permitting process, taking away the bureaucratic nightmares that many business folks have to form a business and to get businesses going. This would be incredible. This would actually, leaving those three lines in the bill, I think, would kill any sort of business potential that we may see coming out of these. So I would ask that you would remove that section, but definitely keep in Section 4C2, giving municipalities the further ability to restrict them.
Okay.
To answer any questions.
Yeah, thank you, Michael. Questions for Mr. Katze? Michael, stand by for a moment if you would.
Okay.
Ian, your thoughts on Michael's concerns about the viability?
Well, Senator Huggins, I think he's got a good point, and I think this would be treating, you know, if we were to keep this in there, it treats this class of vehicle quite a bit differently. This concern was brought up in House Finance, and we compromised at that point, but I don't think the sponsor would have any objection to heeding Mr. Katz's concerns.
Well, we're sort of at a wind road here. I don't personally have any objections, and it makes sense to me to sort of turn this around, but in the same token, it could also be a death pill for the bill, because we get caught in the timing, and for one reason or another, the House doesn't want to entertain the change, then just based on time,
mm-hmm.
it may potentially die. Any other committee members' thoughts on it? So I guess one course of action is to let it go and change it later on, or, you know, try to do the change. Unless, does anybody feel strongly about not taking that provision out? What's our professional opinion from a operator licensing kind of person?
Mr. Chairman, if the amended version were to pass, one of the first things that your Division of Motor Vehicles will do is send out a mass mailer to every organized government in Alaska, letting them know of this change, just from an awareness point of view. If they choose to, certainly we're not going to force any government, local government, to take action, but in that wording, where it is the chicken or the egg, and they have to take action first before the product can be used, I'm not looking forward to having an unhappy customer in my office after they pay me $200 for vehicle registration, not being able to then drive it because their local community hasn't adopted an ordinance. So if this law passes, that's the very first thing that our office is prepared to do, is to send a letter out to every local government saying, this is what's happened. In order for this vehicle to be legal in your community, please pass this sample ordinance.
Okay.
Go ahead.
We had a bill here a couple of years ago or so about these rigs you stand on, and what do they call them things?
Segway is the brand. You call them by statute personal electric vehicles.
Yeah. Does this involve them in any way?
Regretfully, it does not. Through the chair, Senator, it does not. And we looked at using that particular statute, but it is defined to a two-wheeled, vertically upright. It is a Segway that when that bill was passed, I believe it was in approximately 2000 or 2001 that bill was passed. And it is specific to the Segway.
If I might, Mr. Chairman, I think the sponsor would prefer that any changes be made. As you said, we are kind of at a Y in the road. I think I would suggest that we do that here rather than in finance, where they certainly wouldn't have the patience that you've shown us today.
The point is not that. Any changes made has to go back to the House for concurrence.
That's
We'd be
concern.
Better off adopting it as you presented it so that it could go forward. Otherwise, you're looking at, and I don't appreciate you shaking your head while I'm talking. I'm talking to the gentleman behind you. It's your call. I'm willing to adopt, amend it, as certainly the rest of us probably are. But.
I think it's probably greater than 50%, maybe a death pill if we modify it, because it doesn't.
Yeah.
I mean, Senator Klukas is exactly right. We'll have to go back to the House. And, the rules chairman knows this better than I, but just the clock runs out on us. Senator Cowder, what do you think?
Yeah, we're running out of time, too, and the less complicated we make it, the better for the chance of
it. In the real world, the oil tax and preoccupation was. People say, golly, low-speed vehicles, we'll do that next time around. It's not that important. So,
actually, Senator, I might point out, though, I think this bill's, in order to reflect, because of the clerical mistake by the staff, this is still going to have to go through concurrence to reflect the changes that House Finance made. So, unfortunately, it is kind of that's why I'm saying that
we
might
go.
As well.
I move that we delete on page 3. C, lines 9 and 11. The which I think will accomplish your task. Is that...
That's correct, Senator.
Any objections to that? Okay, good. So without objection, that will stand. With that, Mr. Jack Connelly. Jack?
Excuse me.
Yes.
Was there language you needed to add also, or...?
Through the chair, Senator Kukesh. No, not in this case. That removing this would accomplish what you were thinking it would.
Okay.
That leaving only the issue of the definition on the table, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Mr. Connelly?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Stand by one. Senator French?
And what about that definition? I was anticipating that we'd get some language with respect to linking this bill to the federal standards that Mr. Bannock has referred to.
We've been...
Yeah, the federal standard, what you're asking.
It was my understanding that we were going to attempt to link the definition of low-speed vehicle to the federal standards. We haven't done that. Is that is there a suggested language for that?
Yes, through the chair, Senator French. We could just basically say that a low-speed vehicle has the meaning given in federal law.
And is that meant to supplant or replace the definition that's on page 3, lines 15 through 19, or is it supposed to augment it?
Through the chair, Senator French, it would replace that and give us, it's the more pragmatic approach to reflect how the federal standards are changing.
Okay, and do we have suggested language or something typed up, or are we just...
It would have to be a conceptual amendment if the committee chooses
we'll
to do it. I did not change this.
And I'm glad you pointed that out. I'm sorry I missed that. We can work with Debbie and get the drafter to do that, but this is all time, guys. So, I mean, remember, we're jumping on the roller coaster here. So we have good intentions, but anyway. Okay, can we get that done, David? Okay. Are there other modifications? I'm sorry, I missed that. I must have been daydreaming.
No, through the chair, Senator, or to you, the chair, Mr. Huggins, that would take care of any of the, I think that would take care of the concerns that Mr. Connelly pointed out or was going to point out.
Mr. Connelly?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, please put yourself on the record and bring us up to speed from your perspective.
Okay, thank you very much. My name is Jack Connelly. My title is Legal Counsel and Regulatory Specialist for Global Electric Motor Cars. We're located in Fargo, North Dakota. We're a manufacturer of low-speed vehicles. Ours are called the GEM cars. And basically, the opt-in provision and the definition being consistent with federal law, I was prepared to talk about those. I'd certainly be happy to answer any questions or give you suggested language if you'd like. But I did have a comment on Section B. If I read it correctly, basically these vehicles would not be allowed to cross a highway that has a speed of 35 miles an hour or more. There are some states that have similar restrictions at 45 miles an hour. Some states don't have any. I'd like to mention that our cars accelerate quite well, and crossing intersections has not been a problem from our standpoint. At least we're not aware of it as a safety matter. There have been some studies by the National Lab in Idaho, run by the Department of Energy, where our cars have an acceleration up to 20 miles an hour anywhere from, I believe it's 4.9 seconds to 5.9 seconds, depending on the type of the vehicle and the state of charge. So it's not like they're slow to get across. And so if I were to, ask for any sort of change, it would be to make a clarification that it can cross streets that have speed limits more than 35. And the reason for that is, in many cases, people may need to cross a higher speed road to get to where they want to go, such as the library, movie theater, or the grocery store.
Yeah, Mr. Connelly, stand by. As I read the bill, it has that provision in it. It says you can cross at an intersection. That provision is allowed.
I'm reading the part that says an intersection with a highway that is authorized for low-speed vehicles.
Right.
Which I'm interpreting that to mean 35-mile-an-hour highways.
No. The bill accomplishes exactly what you described
Okay, well then, I'm not going to belabor that one then.
Okay. Do you have anything else?
No, I encourage the changes that were discussed earlier about the opt-in provision. I could give you some examples where that really hasn't worked too well in a couple other states. And the way I think it's important to get it consistent with the federal law, it avoids the questions about preemption. And just for your own information, the federal standard definition changed just 2 weeks ago to a gross vehicle weight of 3,000 pounds. And I notice your statute uses an unladen weight, so there is a difference there.
Okay, would you say again the weight?
The federal definition right now calls for a gross vehicle weight rating, or GVWR, of 3,000 pounds.
Okay.
And it was changed, it was actually changed in August of 05 to 2,500 pounds, so it is a kind of evolving definition.
Okay, so what are happening in the other states in that? Is there a grandfather period or a grace period?
Most states have adopted the federal standards and they don't put in any sort of a specific weight limit on their own.
Okay.
There's about 8 or 9 states that have their own weight limits, and we're already contacting them to see if they will change to be consistent with the federal definition and requirements.
Yeah. Okay. Stand by, Mr. Cannelli. As we look at this, Dwayne, from a licensing standpoint, if we put in the federal standard, then we flow every time the federal standard changes, right? So that accomplishes Mr. Cannelli's concern on gross vehicle weight.
Yes, sir, it would. The vehicle that Mr. Cannelli is speaking of would come to the DMV with a document, and that document would read, this low-speed vehicle conforms to federal regulations under Title 49 CFR, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
That's what the proposed conceptual amendment needs to reflect. So then, if 2 years from now the federal government raises it to 3,500, then Alaska is still green light.
Okay. I'm sorry, Senator Cowden, did you have?
I just was wondering about getting insurance on it. Is it required by your office, if you're licensed, that they have to have liability insurance on the vehicle?
Through the chair, Senator Cowdery, it will be with this law.
It would be an honor system, just like the existing law. They just check something off and say they got it.
Through the chair, Senator, we prefer to call that the certification, because that's the word that the statute uses. But by this bill, for mandatory financial responsibility purposes, everything that's on your Cadillac would be identical to what would be on this vehicle.
What's the cost, anticipated cost of these vehicles? Maybe somebody that's online, and what kind of warranty comes with it?
An expert at that.
Mr. Cannelli, can you give us a price breakdown of about three models?
Right. Well, we've got six models, and our prices for just a two passenger would probably be roughly $6,000-$7,000, and I think the six passenger model optioned up would probably be up to maybe even as high as $15,000.
Yes,
and I'm just talking off the top of my head. I haven't visited our website recently for pricing.
Okay.
I understand, Mr. Chairman, that China is very interested in entering our market over here, and that they have SUVs. That gets 35 miles per gallon or better for in the range of $12,000. And they're going to have four-door sedans get the same one range for $8,000 and things like that. I was looking at one of the trade magazines and the articles, they said, watch out, and it's the same thing they said with Japan when they were coming out with the Honda and everything, and Korea with their cars. So we can brace ourselves for the Chinese market, I think, too, is going to be over here.
Yeah, but remember the Yugo.
Yeah, I'm ready to go.
Okay, Ian, as we have it now, are there any other aspects of the bill that, based on your experience of having gone through the House, that have something that would be objectionable that you've heard?
Senator Huggins, no. I think we've covered all the bases here in this meeting today.
Okay. And Dwayne, yourself, from the licensing standpoint?
DMV loves the bill.
Okay. Committee members, what we'd like to do, if there's no objections, to try to maintain some life in the bill, since this isn't real complicated. We've adopted the federal regulation, and we've deleted the language there, that we just take that conceptually, get it drafted, and but move it on today so that we don't have to come back unless somebody has. Okay. So with that, if we can have a motion, Senator Cowdery.
I move that we move House Bill 403 as amended, as we just discussed, to the next committee every.
And we're looking at CS for House Bill 403 is the version, and there is zero fiscal note, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, good. Yes, sir.
There should be a small fiscal note.
Okay. Okay. Small fiscal note. Okay, with small fiscal note. I mean, I'm sorry, it's, yes, 10.5, I got it. Okay, that is a small fiscal note. Okay, good. Well, thank you, and good luck in your journey here, and Debbie will get you squared away.
Thank you, Mr.
Wayne. Good to see you, and like I said, we wanted to make you an honorary member of the committee, but maybe next year.
Take a seat for me, sir, someday.
And with that, we adjourn. Thank you, guys.